Welcome to More in the Word, a podcast of Moore Theological College in Sydney, Australia, that seeks to glorify God through biblically sound, thought-provoking, and challenging talks and interviews. In this episode, from an elective at the Priscilla and Aquila Centre Annual Conference held on Monday, the 3rd of February, 2025, Kate Snell, Dean of Students at Mary Andrews College and wife of Brian, Associate Minister at St. Philip's South Tarramarra, helps us think theologically about menopause in a talk arising from a research paper she wrote as part of her Master of Arts in Theology. Kate points out that menopause has the potential to challenge everything a woman thinks and feels about herself and her place in the world. And therefore, this season of life raises all kinds of issues for women that also impact the way the church can care for them pastorally. Even if you're not a woman, let me encourage you to listen to Kate's talk, particularly if you are involved in pastoral ministry. It will assist you in understanding the experience of something that will one day affect around 50% of the population. That includes all the women in your life. Please note, this episode is a companion piece to next week's bonus episode with Kath Bruce and Kathy Young on the medical and ministry considerations of menopause. We hope you find both episodes helpful.
Thank you so much for being here. It really is such a great privilege to meet with you this afternoon. And I thought I'd outline a little bit of the context of how this has come about and where we'll go. So as you would have read from the descriptions of my elective, I wrote an 8,000-word research project on menopause as my final project for my Masters of Arts in Theology, which I finished last year here at Moore. And that came about because one day Brian, who, as I mentioned, is a minister in our church, came to me and related that there were a whole bunch of women at our church who were speaking with him about their experience of menopause. And there were a whole bunch of men who were speaking to him about their wives' experience of menopause. And he felt ill-equipped for these conversations. He asked me if I had any resources so that he could better inform himself and better pastor these men and women. And I didn't, but I was sure it would be quite simple for me to find some. So off I went. But there wasn't actually much to be found. And so it dawned on me, oh, actually, I don't know much about menopause either. I'm in my early 40s. I'm a woman. It's going to be a big part of my life in the very near future. And yet it wasn't on the PDHPE syllabus at school. I'd never heard it mentioned in a sermon or had it come up even in a sharing time in Bible study. My mum had never shared much of her experience of menopause. And so I found like there just wasn't a lot for us to go on. And so at the same time that Brian was asking for resources, I was one subject of finishing my master's, and it became evident that the timing of his questions was God's good gift to us, and I decided to write this research paper. So what you're getting today is that paper almost in its entirety, and because it was an academic research paper, there'll be lots of references to various authors and lots of quotes. I've tried to make it sound less like an academic research paper that I'm just reciting and more of a popular level elective, but I'm sure I didn't get that right all the time, so bear with me. And you'll also get some additional thoughts that I've had in recent months since submitting. I think I also want to acknowledge that when I wrote the paper, and given that it came from Brian's questions, and then as I prepared the elective for today, I had in mind a more mixed audience. The fact that there are four men in the room, and one of them's the IT guy, and one of them's my husband, that has taken me by surprise. And I think if I'd known that I'd be speaking to a room majority of women, I might have tweaked this presentation, because some of my content is intended to help men better enter into and understand the experience of women, to help them better pastor and equip them with greater awareness and empathy. But I might have said some things differently had I known here we would be. But perhaps you might like to consider then, like, how can you take what you learned today and take it to your ministry team and put it on the agenda at your church so that we can love and care for women well? A couple of disclaimers. I'm not a medical professional and I don't consider myself to be an academic. When I've researched in the past, I've chosen topics that have already been thoroughly considered by minds far greater than mine. And so I found this task quite daunting to start from scratch and try to come up with something original and faithful and true and helpful was hard. And so as we meet together today, I invite you into this attempt to think theologically about menopause. I'm not claiming to be an expert. I'm not presenting you with a definitive treatment of menopause. I'm on a journey and I'd like you to come with me. Because this project was limited, and it was limited by my own intellect. It was limited by 8,000 words. It was limited by the fact that I was trying to write and research while also working part-time, being a minister's wife and the mother of two very young daughters. I didn't have the luxury of endless hours to dwell on this. But in God's kindness, I think there are some good things to say. I'm convinced of the importance of the topic, and I hope that you'll leave here knowing more about menopause and being challenged on how you can better understand your own experience and pastor women in your lives. Because we know Jesus claims lordship over all of our lives. The Bible speaks to all of our lives. Our faith is integral to everything we think, say, and do. And God is invested in every aspect of our lives, from the very mundane to the extraordinary. And so we can be confident that actually menopause is something that God cares deeply about. And we know also that menopause has the potential to challenge everything a woman thinks and feels about herself and her place in the world. It will impact her physically, mentally, emotionally, spiritually, relationally. It might prompt her to ask big questions about identity, purpose, suffering, and utility. It may impact her marriage, her relationships, her career, and her ministry. And it also has the potential to bring about enormous growth and offer genuine hope to teach us about our Creator and ourselves. As Rachel Jones in her excellent book, A Brief Theology of Periods, puts it, our bodies, both in their design and in their details, are intended to send us a message. And so I wanted to explore the questions. What message does menopause send us? What message does menopause send us about God? What does it teach us about our bodies and living in this world? And what does it teach us about the future? And so to answer those questions, I just used that classic framework, creation, fall, redemption. So we'll work through those. Here's where I'm going. I want to suggest that menopause teaches us, firstly, that we are embodied creatures who are created by a loving God. Secondly, it teaches us that our bodies are broken and we live in a fallen world. And thirdly, menopause reminds us that we are redeemed. We have hope for life beyond this world and opportunities for growth in this one. Before we jump into the theological considerations, let's just start with some key definitions, examine the symptoms associated with menopause, and consider the historical and current cultural context in which we find ourselves. So key definitions, a woman's menstrual cycle, that's the time between one period and the next. And every month there is a complex dance, complex interaction between the pituitary gland in the brain, the ovaries, and the uterus. Messages in the form of hormones are passed around the body, preparing for a possible pregnancy. An egg is produced. The lining of the uterus thickens up. Hormones prepare the vagina and the cervix to accept and support sperm. And when pregnancy doesn't occur, the egg is absorbed back into the woman's body. The thick lining of the uterus is shed and there's a period. And then the cycle begins all over again. Menopause then refers to a woman's final menstrual period. So after 12 months, if she hasn't had a period, then we would consider her to be postmenopausal. And menopause occurs because as a woman ages, she loses ovarian follicles, her egg supply reduces, and levels of key hormones, estrogen and progesterone, start to decline. The average age of menopause in Australia and the UK is 51, and most women will experience menopause between 45 and 60 years of age. Perimenopause is the time of transition leading up to the menopause, which is actually just one day, that final period, to 1 year after the menopause. So perimenopause up to menopause, 12 months after menopause. Then we can say she's postmenopausal. Most women begin perimenopause in their early to mid-40s, with perimenopause lasting between 4 to 6 years on average. For some women, it can last as long as 10 years, or be as brief as 1 year. We tend to use that language a bit differently though. We just talk about menopause, meaning kind of more of that general long period. So I'll keep in common parlance, I'll use menopause and perimenopause interchangeably as we do commonly. Symptoms. Stereotype. We're all familiar with that. The stereotype of the perimenopausal woman is one who's sleepless from those night sweats, hot and bothered by hot flushes. But the symptoms are so much more wider ranging and more complex than that. And I was really surprised as I started to dig into this. And my first hint that it was more complex than just the hot flushes was actually when I went to my GP about a year ago, or just before I turned 40. And I felt like I was losing my mind. I was forgetting things. I couldn't see things like that were right in front of me. And so I went to her, I was like, maybe I have a brain tumor. And she's like, I don't think you do. I think that she did the test and it all was okay. But she said to me at that point, she said, oh, but you're approaching 40. Your estrogen is starting to decline. This will impact your cognition. And I was like, sorry, what? Like, I just did not know. And so maybe this will be new to you too. But we'll start with the physical symptoms. So they include abdominal pain and other gastrointestinal symptoms, altered sense of smell and taste, breast tenderness, brittle nails, dizziness, dry eyes, skin and mouth, hearing issues, hair loss, heart palpitations, heartburn, joint or muscle pains, and migraines. And then the more common ones, the night sweats, hot flushes, low sex drive. Hot flushes occur because a woman's brain mistakenly thinks that she is overheating, and so it starts a process to cool her down. So she might feel dizziness, shortness of breath, or palpitations. A flush will start to spread over her body and she may begin to perspire, and it can last a few seconds or several minutes. Low libido can result in a decreased desire for sex and decreased pleasure from intercourse and sexual intimacy, and that may come about from vaginal dryness, meaning that sex can be more painful. Cognitive symptoms include brain fog, confusion, and forgetfulness, and this can be particularly distressing. Once capable, confident, able to juggle multiple responsibilities, she starts to feel inept and doubt herself. Dr. Louise Newson wrote The Definitive Guide to Menopause and Perimenopause, and she's been a leading voice in this space. She's a UK author. She's got podcasts and books and so on, so I'll reference her a lot. But she says, many women worry they have dementia or even a brain tumor, which I did. And one woman related, I went from being a very articulate woman to really struggling to hold my own in a conversation, let alone being in a work environment when I would literally forget the word that I was about to say. And that was really hard. Psychological symptoms include low mood, anxiety, and depression. And these mental health issues occur because as estrogen falls, so too does serotonin, which is what regulates our mood, energy, motivation, and sleep. And at the same time as serotonin is decreasing, cortisol is rising, which can lead to an increase in stress levels. And so the changes in these hormones combined with low self-esteem, loss of confidence, difficulty sleeping, and impaired cognition mean that mental health issues are common. And again, I found this really shocking. The statistics on this, women are 2 to 4 times more likely to experience major depression during the perimenopausal phase. And tragically, women aged 50 to 54 had the highest age-specific suicide rate. Relational issues are also very common during perimenopause. Again, Dr. Louise Newson relates, she has a clinic in the UK, menopause-specific. Barely a day goes by in my clinic without a patient telling me how menopause has stretched her relationship to breaking point. The symptoms that we've outlined spill over and impact the people closest to her. Her research tells a sad story. 80% of women expect that menopause places a strain on their children and their family life. Of 1,000 women of menopausal age who she surveyed who had gone through a divorce, 73% blamed menopause for the breakdown of their marriage. 67% said it increased domestic abuse and arguments. So there's a lot going on for women in this season. And there's been different attitudes to menopause throughout history. So let's consider the cultural landscape. For centuries now, menopause has been shrouded in secrecy and fear, with physicians viewing it as a gateway to disease and death. I've found some terrible quotes, and like to be fair, I did find the most terrible ones that were out there. But so we'll start back. 1710, Dr. Simon David Titius declared that menopause was the worst of all calamities to beset a sex that seems destined to support the largest share of human misery. In 1895, Alexander Skene, who was co-founder and president of the American Gynecological Society and founder of the International Congress of Gynecology and Obstetrics, described menopause as the death of the woman in the woman. He held that postmenopausal women were as good as dead. Menopause signaled the end of any meaning or purpose in a woman's life. In 1964, Robert Kistner addressed the American College of Surgeons with the statement, "We are keeping women around too long. They should all be dead soon after age 45. Women are the only mammalian females to live beyond their reproductive usefulness." So that's where we're coming from. And coming out of that, as they started to think about ways to treat menopause, it wasn't to alleviate women's suffering, it was to, you know, improve their utility. And so doctors would assure men and women that hormone replacement therapy would ensure that a woman's breasts and genital organs will not shrivel, she'll be much more pleasant to live with, and will not become dull and unattractive. And so it's no wonder, I think, that we've grown up with this culture of shame and fear around menopause. And I found that as I've told people what I've been researching, I found the older women in church like a bit shocked, and they've obviously never talked about it, whereas I think there is a shift, and I'm really thankful for that. The messaging around menopause has been changing in recent decades. There was a seminal work in 1991, Gail Shee published Menopause, The Silent Passage, which opened up discussions to menopause as a time of transformation and explored how menopause can be a gateway to the second half of life. In 2001, The Wisdom of Menopause was published, in which the author urges women to remember that menopause is a natural process, and the more we learn its secrets and rhythms, the better off our journey through menopause will be. And more recently, menopause has gained even more attention. In 2023, actress Drew Barrymore had her first hot flush live on TV. You can Google that and watch it. She starts stripping off her jacket. She grabs Jennifer Aniston's hand. He's like, "I'm overheating, aren't I?" She's like, "Yeah, you really are." And so that has opened up more discussion. Influential women like Michelle Obama and Mia Friedman in Australia are using their platforms to shed more light on the experience of menopause and remove the stigma associated with it. And menopause specialists like Dr. Louise Newson that I've mentioned, and in Australia, Dr. Ginny Mansberg, are making information accessible through social media and apps and podcasts. You'll even find menopause playlists on Spotify. They're quite amusing, actually. You should look those up. In November 2023, the Australian Senate called an inquiry into menopause to consider the mental, physical, and economic effects that menopause has. One of the reasons for the inquiry is that menopause costs Australian organisations $5 billion annually in turnover costs. It costs women $17 billion a year in lost earnings and superannuation, given that 10% of women leave the workforce due to menopause. And so all this tells us that menopause has the potential to be a very significant season in a woman's life. And yet it's not a topic widely discussed among believers. As she goes through this season, she will now be experiencing strong messages from the culture around her, both positive and negative, telling her what to think and how to act. And yet we're not speaking into that space. And so if the church isn't speaking Christianly about menopause, there's a risk that will imbibe the world's message instead. I really think the church needs to think about how Christians can better understand menopause so that women might grow and mature and be well cared for through this season. Let's consider what reality is being signposted by menopause, beginning with creation. So I think menopause reminds women that they are embodied creatures made by a loving and powerful God. And I think a menopausal woman will be aware of her body in a new way. And as that body changes, she may have cause to stop and wonder at how fearfully and wonderfully she has been made. She may wonder at the intricacies of her body, the organs, systems, the hormones that work together to sustain her life. And she might reflect on the marvelous role that her body played in bringing forth life. But she may not. Instead, it would be easy to resent this changing body and diminish its importance, to detest the organs that decline in function, the systems that are breaking down, and the hormones that wreak havoc. And so understanding her body and its place in God's plans will help a woman to better navigate menopause. She should understand that God made her body, God gave her body limits, God values her body and God has a purpose for her body. So consider the creation account in Genesis 1, 26 to 2018. The creation of the man and woman is a climactic moment, a high point of that account. The creation of night and day, land and sky, vegetation, sun, moon and stars and the living creatures has all been building to this moment. God deliberates in verse 26, executes in verse 27, and human beings come into existence. The powerful, sovereign, good God lovingly and deliberately creates human beings. And they're created in his image. None of the other creatures are described as such, and so humankind is unique. Anthony Hukima, in his work Created in God's Image, explains, humans are to mirror God. When one looks at a human being, one ought to see in him or her a certain reflection of God. Humans were also to represent God. He says, as God's representatives, we should support and defend what God stands for. We should promote what he promotes. And when the humans were created in his image, they were created male and female. Katie McCoy, in her book, To Be a Woman, points out that God arranges the physical world in a series of binaries, day and night, earth and sky, water and land, sun and moon, and finally, male and female. Binary. In today's society, biological sex and gender are not necessarily the same thing, and so male and female are no longer binary terms. This is not so in the Genesis account. According to John Kleining, who I'll reference a lot, his book Wonderfully Made on Theological Anthropology, in Hebrew, the terms male and female refer to both biological sex and gender, and both are given by God in their creation. Sam Albury, in What God Has to Say About Our Bodies, argues that our biology is meaningful. As our image bearing is stressed, so too is our sexual differentiation as male and female. Our sexual difference is bound up in how we are to image God. Genesis 1 shows us that men and women are each made in the image of God, but that together they fully display the image of God. Male and female have unique, non-interchangeable glories. They each see and do things that the other cannot. And so menopause is something women can do that men cannot. Furthermore, God built rhythms and seasons into creation. The sun rises and sets every day, winter turns to spring every year. Likewise, our bodies have rhythms and seasons. And a woman may be particularly attuned to this as her menstruation cycle provides a monthly bodily reminder of the rhythms and seasons of life. These rhythms and seasons give women an opportunity to represent God to the world in a way that men cannot. The way they think about and act during menstruation and menopause provides them with a wonderful, unique opportunity to glorify God as a woman. We were created in God's image. We were created with male and female bodies, but it's worth acknowledging that there is more to our creation than just our physical bodies. Greg Allison proposes that our embodiment includes mental, emotional, volitional, moral, and physical components, and we cannot separate them out. This is relevant for a menopausal woman as what's happening physically to her body will affect her mental, emotional, volitional, and moral components. She should not be surprised by that since she is not merely a body. And when God created our bodies, he created them with limits. Our limits are not the result of the fall. They're not the result of sin, but they were built into creation by a loving God. To be human is to be limited. And to be limited is to be vulnerable. Women are particularly prone to fall into the trap of trying to have it all. They seek to juggle work, marriage, friendships, parenting, fitness, volunteering in the community, serving at church, managing a household. And menopause may come as a harsh reminder to some women that she cannot have it all. She's not created to have it all. Her body has limits. She is vulnerable, and a new season is upon her. Her limits were designed by a loving God to encourage her to keep in step with the rhythms and seasons of life and to live an ordered, godly life. When a menopausal woman feels tired, well, that points her to a god who urges her to rest. When a menopausal woman feels lonely and her relationships are strained, that points her to the god who created her for relationship and who won't let her down. When a menopausal woman feels she has failed, that points her to the god who never does. Kelly Capick in You're Only Human sums it up well. Admitting our vulnerability enables a healthy, honest, and accurate assessment of our existence, which includes authentic dependence on God, neighbor, and the earth. And by recognizing the limits of her body, a woman can have realistic expectations about what she can and can't achieve. If she were to believe the world's lies that we must be productive at all costs, then we deny the very real creaturely limits and the rhythm of a human life as God designed it. When we follow the temptation to deny our finitude, it hurts us and it hurts our relationships and it hurts our work. So God made our bodies and he made them with limits. Let's consider then how God values our bodies. And this will be so important for a menopausal woman to understand because she may cease to value her body and the world won't value her body. I've got a language warning. It's quite a crude quote, but I think it makes a good point. Naomi Watts, the Australian actress, said this: "The world tells us if you're not fertile, you're not," another F word, "a bull. If you're not fertile, you're not effable." And so women may well believe the world's lies that once they hit menopause, they become unattractive and they lose their value. We need to tell them a better story, a story that places the value of their bodies outside of men's desire for them. A woman can be confident that her body has value because God says that it does. God values our bodies, firstly, because they're made in his image. Secondly, because Jesus took on a human body. And thirdly, because Jesus redeemed our bodies. Fourthly, because the Holy Spirit dwells in our bodies. Being made in God's image gives us immeasurable value. The Bible gives our bodies profound dignity and inherent worth. Kleining observes, since he made us in his image, the value of the body does not depend on its worth to the person who owns it. It does not come from its social status or usefulness, nor is it derived only from its place and function in the natural world. The worth of the body is conferred by its divine creator. God created our bodies in his image, and that alone gives them enormous value. Secondly, we know that Jesus took on flesh. John 1:1-14, "In the beginning was the Word, and the Word became flesh and made his dwelling among us." The second person of the Trinity, the eternal Son of God, became fully human. He was conceived by the Holy Spirit and born of the Virgin Mary. He lived in a created human body with human thoughts and feelings and experiences. Kleinig says, "God shows us how much he values our bodies because Jesus took on a body. Through God's Son, who took on a human body to reclaim us bodily for fellowship with God the Father, our bodies once again become what they were meant to be." Capick writes this beautiful explanation on why Jesus' embodiment gives value to our bodies. "God fully demonstrates his delight in our humanity, demonstrates that creation is lovely and lovable in the event of Jesus' very physical human birth." And so since Jesus was willing to take on a body, our bodies have enormous value, even when we feel like they might not. And of course, Jesus did not take on a body merely so that we might ascribe value to ours. He took on a body so that he could redeem ours, which gives our bodies great value. He had to take on a body so that he could live a perfectly obedient life and be the spotless sacrifice for our sins, taking the penalty that we deserved. Hebrews 2:17 makes this clear. "For this reason, he had to be made like them, fully human in every way, in order that he might become a merciful and faithful high priest in service to God, and that he might make atonement for the sins of the people." Finally, our bodies have value because they are indwelt by the Holy Spirit. 1 Corinthians 6:19 tells us our bodies are a temple of the Holy Spirit, And since our bodies are shrines where God resides, Kleining asks, what greater honour could be conferred on us and our bodies than that? Furthermore, in John 14, 16 to 17, Jesus says, and I will ask the Father, and he will give you another advocate to help you and be with you forever, the Spirit of truth. The world cannot accept him because it neither sees him nor knows him, but you know him, for he lives with you and will be in you. The Holy Spirit dwells in us, and this gift means we are united with Christ. We belong to him. So our bodies are highly valued by God, and this is just so important for a menopausal woman to remember. They might feel shame about what is happening to them or disappointed with how their body is behaving. K-Pick poses the question, why should we be embarrassed about the material world if Jesus wasn't? So our woman doesn't need to feel embarrassed about her hot flushes or her weight gain. She doesn't need to worry that she's no longer attractive. Menopause is not something to be humiliated by. It's part of having a female body and living in the world. She can remember that her body has value because she is made in God's image, because Jesus also had a body, Jesus redeemed her body, and the Holy Spirit dwells in her. And when God made our bodies, he gave our bodies a purpose. Genesis 1:28, God blessed them and said to them, be fruitful and increase in number, fill the earth and subdue it, rule over the fish in the sea and the birds in the sky and over every living creature that moves on the ground. So humankind was tasked with two responsibilities. Firstly, they're to bear offspring. Women's bodies have been miraculously created to bring life into the world. Rachel Jones, in A Brief Theology of Periods, describes it beautifully. It's almost as though that cosmic stage on which God choreographed the marvel of Genesis 1 has been shrunk down into our wombs, where the miracle happens in micro. Prior to menopause, most women will become mothers. They'll have the opportunity to bear offspring and to fulfill this part of the creation mandate. But of course, menopause definitively signals the end of a woman's participation in the miracle of creation. And so a woman might wonder what her purpose is when she can no longer bear children. We're going to return to that question. Secondly, humans are to create and tend an ordered society. They're to act as God's vice regents, ruling over the animals so that all animals would thrive on earth together with mankind, humankind. In addition, they're to have dominion over the land, which must be seen in the sort of facilitating servanthood which maintains an environment in which persons who reflect something of the nature of God's love and creativity can be at home. So God made our bodies, God values our bodies, and God enables us to do life in them. Sam Albury sums it up well. If we have been created, then our body is not some arbitrary lump of matter. It means something. For all the difficulties you have with it, it is the body God wanted you to have. It is a gift. So let's think about the fall and how that speaks to menopause. Because we know that despite the fact that our bodies are created, valued, and purposeful, we seem to have all manner of problems with them. They don't live up to the expectations that we have of them. They don't look the way we want them to look. They don't function the way we think that they should. And this, of course, is because of sin. In Genesis 3, we see Satan, in the form of the serpent, tempt Adam and Eve to sin. He persuades them that God is withholding good things from them and that if they eat the fruit, they'll be like God, knowing good and evil. Kleining argues Adam and Eve thought they would have an even better life with even more perfect knowledge. They'd be their own gods with super minds that would enable them to know everything. And with their super minds, they would transcend the limits of their bodies. This is a full frontal attack on the whole person. The body with its appetite for enjoyable food, the mind with its quest for more knowledge, and the soul with its trust in God and his word. And Satan's full frontal attack was successful. The temptation proved too great. Eve took some of the fruit and ate it and gave it to Adam, who also ate, and the consequences were immediate and catastrophic. God rightly punished them by subjecting their bodies and creation itself to decay. And we see this in Genesis 3:16 to 19. Life on earth becomes difficult. Work is painful. The ground is uncooperative. Relationships are strained. The body is cursed. By its banishment from God's presence, the body is diminished and doomed to die. Much of its beauty and splendor is lost. Romans 7:24 describes it as a body of death. Romans 6:6 as a body of sin. And Philippians 3:21 as lowly. The man and the woman are sentenced to die. Kleining says this begins immediately and escalates gradually as the body weakens, suffers, sickens, ages, and wears out. Suffering associated with menopause is a result of the fall and part of the escalation towards death. For women bear the effects of the fall in their bodies in a specific way. The curse explicitly states that childbearing will be painful. And I remember reading that as a younger woman and just assuming that that was limited to the actual hours of labor and birth itself. And that was just so naive. Of course, childbearing expands to include all that leads up to birth and all that follows. From a woman's first period to conception, pregnancy, labor and birth, child rearing, all the way through to that last period and beyond, women experience the brokenness of creation. Menopause tells us that our bodies are broken and we live in a broken world. Creation is cursed, and women experience that in our bodies. The sweats, headaches, brain fog, unruly emotions remind us that everything is not right with the world. And those physical, emotional, and mental health effects that we've already considered may bring with them a shift in a woman's identity, purpose, and sense of worth. Where she was once capable and intelligent, juggling multiple responsibilities across work, family, church, community, she no longer has the energy or capacity that allows her to stay on top of it all. Her identity is affected by this fall. I've heard a number of experiences of people have shared generously with me. One woman reflected that she'd always prided herself on her intellect. She studied at one of the world's most prestigious universities. She's a sharp thinker. She articulates ideas with clarity and insight. And so she was horrified when she started perimenopause and found that she couldn't recall facts. She struggled to string sentences together. She failed to comprehend books and articles that she once would have digested quickly and easily. She'd always thought of herself as clever, and menopause was an attack on that identity. Another woman explained that she hadn't realized how much it meant to her that she was always thought of as fit and attractive. She said, "I've always been naturally thin. I never had to work hard to stay a healthy weight. But that started to change in my late 40s, and it changed dramatically when I hit menopause. Suddenly I had to exercise twice as hard to stop from gaining weight, and I had to be much more careful about what I ate. I'd always basked in the admiration of others, but suddenly I wasn't thin and pretty anymore." And so I think there's good that can come from this challenge to our identity, because menopause exposes our pride and our vanity, and God can bring growth from that. But I just also wanted to observe that it can be very painful and unnerving to have your identity thrown into question. And links to questions of identity are questions of purpose. It may be a long time between the birth of a woman's last child and her experience of menopause, but as women are having children later in life, it may not actually be that long and can in some cases be only a matter of a few years. Either way, menopause still raises questions of purpose, because if Genesis 2 states that one of the purposes of humanity is to be fruitful and multiply, what does that mean for a woman who can no longer do so? And so many women will experience a loss of purpose, for they can no longer bear children. And even though they might have finished having kids years ago, they'll still experience a genuine sense of grief over the finality of this. For women in the Old Testament, the end of their childbearing days would have brought with it a particular sense of grief. Since God promised that the offspring of the woman would bring about Eve's demise and that God's king would be a descendant of David, then for Israelite women, Rachel Jones says, every period marked another month. You were waiting for the Messiah's arrival, and menopause would have drawn a line of sorts under your participation in God's purposes. So no wonder Sarah laughed when the visitors declared that she would have a part in salvation history. At that point, she'd given up any hope of having children, being past the age of childbearing and describing herself as shriveled up. For these old covenant women, personal and national sorrow were intertwined. For women today, menopause may signal the end of her physical ability to bear children, and it may also come at a time when she no longer has an active mothering role. For some women, menopause will coincide with an empty nest and cause her to question her purpose and value when she no longer has children at home to care for. Many women build their sense of identity and worth on mothering. So for many years, she's looked to meet the needs of her children, shaping her life around theirs, rightly so. And suddenly she no longer has that scaffold on which to build her life and is left pondering her identity and purpose. For a woman who has not had children and experiences menopause, there may be a genuine sense of loss that she will now never have the chance to. One woman explained she feels like she's paying the price for goods she never got to take home. Menopause will also affect a woman's sense of worth. Not only has the fall resulted in broken bodies, but it's distorted the way we think about our bodies. And we see this in Genesis 3:7. The first thing Adam and Eve do is cover themselves. For the first time ever, they're self-conscious, seeking to hide themselves from one another and from God. And so it's no surprise that women feel self-conscious today, and perhaps especially in menopause. There's immense pressure from the world to be beautiful, young, fit and healthy. We're constantly subjected to images of unrealistic, heavily edited photos of the ideal woman and are bombarded with advertisements for weight loss plans and beauty products. Women absorb the not so subtle message that aging is the enemy to be fought at all costs. Menopause does signal the end of a woman's youth and brings with it wrinkles, extra weight, thinning hair, signaling that she no longer fits society's expectations of her. And so she might feel that sense of shame. It's worth noting that not all women experience this or consider menopause to be a great burden. Some women told me how relieved they were and that they no longer had to deal with periods, no more bulky pads in their underwear, worries about leakage and wearing light colour pants, washing period underwear or managing contraception. But menopause reminds us that our bodies are broken and we live in a broken world, which affects our physical bodies as well as our sense of identity, purpose, and worth. So we've covered creation and fall. Let's move on to redemption, because I'm so thankful and relieved that for the believer, menopause can be redeemed. I do wonder, though, if for the non-believer, menopause remains somewhat of a tragedy, that reminder that we are wasting away, that our bodies are decaying, and that the end is drawing near. But not so for us, because the resurrection changes everything. Because of Jesus, menopause can tell a better story. Rachel Jones says of periods, and the same is true of menopause. Menopause doesn't just have to be something we endure or put up with. It can also be something positive, something that reminds us of the spiritual realities that underpin our existence and that presents us with an opportunity to fix our eyes on the Lord Jesus. So let's consider these spiritual realities. Andrew Cameron, who was one of my lecturers when I was here, wrote a book, Joined Up Life, and presents the new future as a key consideration in any life package. And I found his chapter on singleness a compelling model of how he applies his thinking. So I've attempted to imitate him. Again, it's an attempt, but he uses these words and I'll apply them to menopause. We need a little more theological detective work on how to determine how menopause points us to the new future. Here's my best guess. So here's my best guess. Firstly, menopause points to a passing away of the generative phase of human life. Women no longer bear offspring. So menopause points us to the generative reality we find in Jesus. God alone is the one who gives new life through his Spirit by the death and resurrection of his Son. And this new life is possible because of our regeneration, that idea that Christians are born again. We're given a new heart and a new spirit. J.I. Packer says, regeneration is a transition from spiritual death to spiritual life, and conscious, intentional, active faith in Christ is its immediate fruit. So the cessation of periods reminds us that while women may play a part for a time in the generation of new life, ultimately it is God alone who creates new life in its truest and fullest sense. And we can be sure of this because Jesus rose from the dead. Jesus affects our resurrection on our behalf. His resurrection was bodily. 1 Corinthians 15:20 tells us, Christ has indeed been raised from the dead, the first fruits of those who have fallen asleep. First fruits are a sign and a guarantee of what is to come. And since Jesus was physically resurrected, we can trust that we will be too. And perhaps a menopausal woman will long to know exactly what her new body will be like as the old one lets her down. And Paul gets that. He knows that's a common yearning. 1 Corinthians 15:35, people ask, well, with what kind of body will they come? We can't know for certain what our resurrection body will be like. However, we know enough to find great comfort. Our resurrected bodies will be like Jesus' resurrected bodies. We see from the gospel account that Jesus appeared to the disciples and many others that he could walk and talk, eat and fellowship. Sam Aubrey says, when he was raised, he was still recognizably Jesus. He still bore the scars of his crucifixion and broke bread with his disciples much in the way he had done before. But he was also different, seemingly able to pass through closed doors and appear and disappear at will. What we see in Jesus' body is continuity yet changed, so we can assume the same for ourselves. We'll be recognizable to loved ones, able to eat and work and play. And so a menopausal woman can look forward to that new body, not because she'll recover her youth and beauty, her wrinkles reversed, her body slim again, but because she'll be transformed into what she always should have been. Her body will finally be fit for purpose. And so menopause is no longer a threat, but a promise that Jesus brings new life in our regeneration and in our resurrection. She does not need to lament that her best days are behind her. On the contrary, her regeneration and Jesus' resurrection promises that they're ahead of her. Grey hair and deepening lines on my face don't need to speak to me of a past I can't recover, but a future I can barely conceive. And furthermore, the generative reality we find in Jesus reaches completion at the resurrection. There will come a point at which, like a menopausal woman, God ceases to create new human beings. He'll perform one final mighty act of creation, bringing forth new heavens and a new earth, and then he'll cease to create again. So Christian women can therefore welcome menopause as a sign that they're being liberated from the constraints of menstruation and childbearing. They're shedding a bodily function that belongs to this age, which brought with it all kinds of pain and suffering. This shedding is a hint of the time when we will shed our mortal bodies and be liberated from their decay and free of their constraints. The end is not nigh. The beginning is closer than ever. And in a similar way, and this is a more recent, less formed thought, but I wonder if menopause reminds us of the goodness of rest, because menopause is rest from the work of creation. Menopause is rest built into a woman's body in a totally unique way, and it points us to the God who rested from the work of his creation. Menopause calls us, come, rest. And secondly, as we think about redemption, while women no longer bear the fruit of their wombs, they can bear the fruit of the gospel. While they're not making disciples by birthing them, no longer participating in the Genesis command to be fruitful and multiply, they can very much participate in Jesus' command in Matthew 28:19 to go and make disciples of all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father and of the Son and of the Holy Spirit and teaching them to obey everything I've commanded you. So menopausal women can still participate in growing God's kingdom. They're to take seriously the call to evangelism, leading people to a commitment to follow Jesus and discipling them, teaching them, instructing them, modeling to them how to lead a godly life. Women can also bear the fruit of the Spirit. Her bodily fertility may have ceased, but her spiritual fertility has the capacity for boundless growth. Menopause is an avenue for sanctification. This season offers unique opportunities of growth and godliness and maturity. Menopause offers a woman the opportunity to examine her life and her character and consider whether she is conducting herself in a manner worthy of the gospel. Menopause can be a time of heightened emotions. Women often describe how they feel angry. One woman related, "My husband sitting on the couch breathing was enough to make me want to stab him." They feel volatile, out of control, easily frustrated, prone to being cranky, impatient, and unkind. And these feelings can be the result of chaotic hormones. But does that excuse the sinful behavior? I think not. And so it's an opportunity for her to reflect on her character and her conduct. Not everyone agrees with me. There is a Christian book called The Seven Transforming Gifts of Menopause, and the author Cheryl Bridges argues that actually this anger that comes from menopause is a gift, and she even goes so far as to describe it as a human right. She tells women they have repressed their anger for too long and have been conditioned to be nice ladies. She urges women to harness their anger and use it to propel themselves forward into a new space of life. I think that describing anger as a gift to be embraced isn't particularly helpful, but I think she's right that a woman can examine her emotions and use them to enter into a new space of life. And let's hope that that new space of life is growth in the new self, an opportunity for growth in humility and self-control, patience and gentleness. Examining her character is one way that a woman will grow in godliness, and learning from her suffering is another. For many women, menopause will be a season of genuine and intense distress and suffering. Physical ailments, psychological distress, relational tensions are no small things. And like a cancer diagnosis or a bereavement, they're worthy of our compassion and care. If a woman experiences suffering in menopause, she can be confident that God will use it for her good and his glory. She can rest assured that her father loves her and has not abandoned her, but is at work in her by his spirit to make her more like his son. Romans 5:2-4 promises us that this is the case. We also glory in our sufferings because we know that suffering produces perseverance, perseverance character, and character hope. Thirdly, menopause reminds us that our life on earth is marked by times and seasons. Ecclesiastes 3 reminds us that there is a time for everything and a season for every activity under the heavens. God built predictable rhythms into creation. The sun rises and sets, summer turns to autumn, periods turn to menopause. This is a kindness from God to women. Men's bodies don't give them such visceral reminders that their time on earth has different seasons. Zadie Smith writes, "Women have timepieces built into their bodies, primarily biological clocks, and the menopause, signs that must be heeded, signs that are finally impossible to ignore, seem to me at least as much gift as curse." A wise woman will heed these signs and embrace them as a gift. Rachel Jones writes, "Our wombs mark the seasons of life too. They provide a vivid transition from girlhood to womanhood and then to whatever we can politely call what comes next, which is certainly no less womanhood, but is nevertheless a transition significant enough that they call it the change. These signs tell a woman she's transitioned into a new season of life. This presents her with a unique opportunity to take stock, to reflect on her life and make decisions about how she wants to spend the latter years of it, to ensure that they're fruitful and God-honoring. It's worth thinking carefully about how she might spend these years because she'll have more of them than previous generations." I find that interesting. For Australian women born 100 years ago, life expectancy at birth was 63. The mean age of menopause has increased only slightly by a year or two since then, and so if the age of menopause was previously 50 and you died at 63, you really were in the final years of your life. But life expectancy is now currently around 85, and so you've got a good way to go. And so instead of entering menopause and expecting to only live for another 10 years or so, we can expect another 30 or so. And expectations have changed on how women in their 50s and beyond look and behave. They're no longer old. They have plenty of life yet. And so let's urge them to use it well. Women are free to embrace whatever this season brings for them. For some, it will be retirement and relief that comes from the frustrations of work in a fallen world. That woman might discover a freedom to focus on grandchildren or caring for elderly parents, freedom to volunteer and serve at church and in her community in a new way. But for some women, it could be like quite the opposite. And now there's freedom to commit to their careers in a way they couldn't when they had child-rearing responsibilities. This might be a new season of using previously untapped skills, of bringing gifts to new contexts, feeling energized by the challenge. Many women talk about emerging from menopause feeling stronger, healthier, more secure in their own identity. Non-Christian women might talk about throwing off society's expectations, finding their voice, channeling their rage, and no longer caring about what people think of them. Hopefully, a Christian woman will emerge from menopause with similar feelings of strength, health, and security, but that will come from understanding the value of her body, God's purposes for her, and the hope she has in Jesus. And while menopause may no longer signal imminent death in a way it once did, at some point between menopause and death, a woman will need to accept that she is aging. But society does not value age. Women talk about becoming invisible as they age. One woman says we're talked over, not served, not replied to, brushed aside, and not taken seriously. Well, the church should be different. The church should honour women as they age. Job 12:12 asks, is not wisdom found among the aged? Does not long life bring understanding? Proverbs 16:31, grey hair is a crown of splendour. It is attained in the way of righteousness. Proverbs 20:29 says, the glory of youths is in their strength, but the beauty of the aged is in their grey hair. While a postmenopausal woman may no longer have a mothering role in the way she once did with her own children, and she may never have had, she can still play the role of a spiritual mother. We heard Titus 2 recognises older women have a wealth of wisdom they can pass on to younger women. A postmenopausal woman, while perhaps not thinking of herself as old, should readily admit she is older. And the older we get, the more young women we'll find around us and the more wisdom we have to offer them. It would be a good use of this season for a woman to invest well in the younger generation, recognising that God has given her wisdom worth sharing. And here's a more recent thought that I didn't prepare for the research paper, so it is less formed. But I wonder if menopause points us also to the goodness of sex. There's something to be said here, I think, about the value of sex. That Naomi Watts quote, if you're not fertile, you're not. Well, that's what the world says. If you're not young and beautiful, then you're not worthy of having sex with. But God says something quite different. He doesn't intend for married couples to stop having sex after a woman ceases to be fertile. That would be a return, I think, to the unhelpful views of the past held by church fathers such as Augustine, who would reluctantly allow sex for the sake of children, but regarded it as something essentially sinful apart from that. Even as sex becomes more difficult, painful even as youth and beauty wane, it is still God's intention for a husband and a wife to be joined together as one flesh in the sexual act. 1 Corinthians 7 doesn't say, fulfill your marital duties, do not deprive each other until menopause. Of course, sex during perimenopause and after menopause will be less straightforward, perhaps less enjoyable, less frequent than it was when you were younger and more eager. No doubt sex becomes complicated with age. But God says it is so good, it is to continue. Christopher Ashe has an excellent explanation of why sex is so good. He's just one quote and a brief summary. He says the best and deepest sexual intimacy between a man and a woman is only a pale echo of the passionate devotion of God for his people. God loves his people passionately and wants our marriages to be a representation of his love for his people. Ashe says, consider how your faithful love for one another, fed and nourished through the delights of bodily intimacy, can overflow outwards to bring love and faithfulness to the needy world. Menopause reminds us that sex is so much more than attraction and desire, so much more than fertility and fruitfulness. Sex nourishes a marriage so that the marriage can represent the selfless, sacrificial love of God to an unbelieving world, so that marriage can illustrate the relationship between Christ and his bride, the church. Finally, let's consider the role of the church in a woman's experience of menopause, some pastoral considerations. I don't think we've done a particularly good job of loving women through this season. It is such a vulnerable time in a woman's life, and yet it remains largely unspoken about in our churches. Her body is going through all those changes, relationships under strain, identity called into question. Let's think about how we can love and honour and care for women. Interesting side note, secular workforces are thinking about this. Secular workforces are on the verge of quite significant change in how they care for women. There are some Australian companies such as superannuation fund Future Super and period underwear brand Modibodi who've developed a menopause and menstrual leave policy. And the policy allows for additional days of menopause or menstrual leave. And they're hopeful that they're setting an example and more employers will follow suit. They recognise, as the CEO says, women, when they're hitting their 50s, are just hitting their stride. They have so many skills, they have so much value to add to their community and to their workplaces. And we need to ensure that we elevate these women, that we stop thinking that they're over the hill or their best years are behind them, because it's totally not true. And so if secular workforces are thinking about how to care for women and honour them and recognise them well, wouldn't it be great if we as the church could do better? How good to recognise and value the unique contributions of women in the second half of their lives. Let's not malign them as irrelevant or out of touch, you know, who are just good for making the scones. Let's look for ways to celebrate these women and honour their worth and put their gifts and abilities to good use in the body. However, I think it's also worth remembering that a woman might be intensely vulnerable in this season, hence the addition of those leave policies in workplaces. We might see that a woman who was once enormously capable, with a large capacity and an eagerness to serve in many areas across the life of the church, now wants to step back. And a minister might be confused or disappointed by that. Maybe he could give some consideration to the fact that she may be experiencing symptoms of perimenopause. Maybe she no longer wants to lead the singing at mainly music because it exacerbates her hot flushes. Perhaps she can't organise complex rosters for a time because she's experiencing brain fog. Perhaps she doesn't feel able to lead the welcoming team because she's struggling to match faces to names, and she doesn't want anyone to feel that they're not known and loved and cared for. And so instead of chastising her about her lack of involvement, she deserves kindness and compassion and encouragement to serve in whatever way she can in this season. Of course, it's tricky, and you don't want to make assumptions, and you don't want to start assuming that every woman over 40 is going through perimenopause. And it'll be just such a range for women too. Like one woman said to me, I suddenly realised I hadn't had a period in about a year, and that was that. I was like, wow, I'm hoping for that. But other women will have significant upheaval. So just having an awareness that what women might go through and the fact that you're here is great, and I hope it's been helpful. And of speaking openly, if you're a woman, of your own experiences and educating yourself on menopause just goes a really long way to sensitively pastorally caring for these women. Because we want to recognise that they might feel vulnerable and need to step back, but we want to encourage them not to waste this season, to view it as that season we talked about of growth and sanctification and opportunity. If you're a woman who is going through or has gone through menopause, don't be afraid to talk about that. Share your experiences with younger women. Share what helped you and what was unhelpful and what God taught you, and just try and lessen some of that stigma. If you're in the midst of it, yep, same thing. Don't be ashamed about it. Share openly and set that example. And I think it is worth saying that we need to care well for men in this season too, to offer compassion and support to husbands of women going through menopause. Let me sum up. Menopause tells us a story of hope and redemption, of participating in God's purposes in a new way and eagerly anticipating the life that is to come. There's been a long history of fear and shame, and of women being sent powerful messages now from the world about how to emerge from outdated ideas. This is a significant season in a woman's life, and so thinking theologically about menopause can give Christian women an even more powerful message and God's good plans for them. We sought to think about what message does menopause send us, and so we thought about creation, fall, and redemption. We've been reminded that God lovingly and purposefully made our bodies, that we live in a fallen world, and menopause reminds us of that as we experience those effects in our bodies. But menopause also points us to redemption, that while we participate in the creation of new life for a time, it's ultimately God who creates new life in our regeneration and resurrection. And while we may no longer be able to bear fruit of our womb, we can bear fruit of the gospel as we participate in the Great Commission. And finally, menopause signals a new season of life to be embraced and marked. As a woman ages and nears her death, she can hold on to the hope that actually her life is not ending, but the best is yet to come.
Thank you for listening to More in the Word, a podcast of More Theological College. Our vision as a college is to see God glorified by men and women living for and proclaiming Jesus Christ, growing healthy churches, and reaching the lost. We invite you to attend any of our upcoming events, including this one from the Center for Christian Living. Digital technology like smartphones has revolutionized the way we navigate daily life and the way our whole society functions. We have supercomputers in our hands that can answer almost any question instantly and perform many tasks that make life easier. Such technology has its downsides, like the explosion of accessibility to pornography and the prevalence of online bullying. Even so, our stance as Christians is often something like, let's use this technology wisely but not abuse it, as if the technology is simply a neutral instrument. But the good things of our world, like technology or money, can become much more than this. They can become master teachers that dominate and disciple us. In the next Center for Christian Living Biblical Ethics Workshop, we want to do more than share helpful tips on godly smartphone use, although such tips are useful. We want to zoom out and consider how technology disciples us, how it profoundly reorders our attitudes, operating beliefs, and behaviors, not just personally, but on a society-wide level. Put your phones on silent and join the conversation on Monday, the 27th of October, 2025 at 7:30 p.m. You can register and find out more on the Center for Christian Living website, ccl.more.edu.au. That's ccl.more.edu.au. You can find out more and register by going to the More College website, more, that's more.edu.au. If you have not already done so, we encourage you to subscribe to our podcast through your favorite podcast platform so that you'll never miss an episode. For past episodes, further resources, and to make a tax-deductible donation to support the work of the college and its mission, please visit our website at more.edu.au. If you found this episode helpful, please share it with a friend and leave a review on your platform of choice. We always benefit from feedback from our listeners, so if you'd like to get in touch, you can email us at comms@more.edu.au. The More in the Word podcast was edited and produced by me, Karen Bielhartz, and the communications team at More Theological College. The music for our podcast was provided by Mark July from Pixabay. Until next time,